Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, welcome along. It's Wednesday Night Rugby. We have Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent here in the studio, and we're joined, I hope, by Liam Toland. You're there?
Joe, loud and clear.
Good man. So you were at the Aviva for us on Saturday. It was a hell of an occasion.
Oh, it was. It actually restored my faith in world sport in many, many ways. But I think when Ian Henderson made his first big hit, I think it was like the game was 20 seconds old. And Conor Morris in commentary came out with a great line. He said, "There's no soft shoulders out there." I think that was after about an hour or so. But the first hits were just fantastic. And it reminded us of the gladiatorial side of our game. But some of the quality of skill sets, and I think there was pressure few scrums, certainly in the opening half hour, which, so there was a lot of physicality, there was huge intensity, but there was wonderful skill on show as well. And I really enjoyed how Ulster attacked Leinster's strengths and nullified them as well in so many ways.
I thought an erudite, learned man like yourself was above the base appeal of physicality, no? Clearly not.
Well, I just started burst now. I was just, because when these games arrived, Joe, particularly the last time Ulster played Leinster in a big European game, we know the result therein. So to see a player of Ian Henderson's stature lay down the law so early on was wonderful. Mm. As well as that, when we were preparing for the game in commentary before kickoff, there was an awful lot of parity between both sides. There was a lot of the halfbacks, you could argue, were very similar. The second rows were very similar. The front rows, which in its own right is its own talking point now with Jack McGrath. But there's an awful lot of parity. So for me, the big question was, can Ulster dominate physically, most importantly, culturally? And we saw, regardless of the Stockdale and all the other aspects of the game, when it came to the 71st minute, it was 18-all. And yeah. For me, then, the culture of Leinster's understanding of cup rugby versus Ulster's learning of cup rugby, I think that was the difference. At that stage, either side could have won, maybe. Ulster had just emptied their tank to that point, but it was fantastic, and it was such a pity that someone had to lose the game. But that opening first few hits definitely was wonderful to watch.
Rory, you were in Edinburgh watching from afar, I presume?
Yeah, first half in an airport hotel, and the second half on my phone going through security and all sorts of things. So
I won't lie, Rory, it wasn't the way to enjoy it.
No, it wasn't. I did sit down and enjoy it the next day. It was phenomenal. And I did think Ulster were going to put it up to them, but just thinking that and then is actually seeing it and seeing Leinster rocked back on their heels like that in a way that, I know Toulouse beat them, but, you know, just the physical nature of Ulster's performance, the questions that they asked of Leinster, and there's humanity on that Leinster team sheet. I mean, that Leinster team sheet was pretty much the same as the one that beat Toulouse, and I thought they looked a little bit vulnerable on the team sheet, but they came out and gave an unbelievable team performance that day in the wind and blew Toulouse away. But Ulster exposed that humanity and showed that no team can lose the amount of knowledge and experience and that Leinster have done and survive. And that's the big key for Leinster in the next 3 weeks, is getting those bodies back on the field, because I think they need Henshaw, Toner and Sexton, and maybe even James Lowe in particular, to get to the level that they need to be at to beat Toulouse again, because you know, Toulouse, having had that experience, will be stronger.
Well, when you look at the Ulster contingent playing for, or you said the Leinster contingent playing for Ulster, you look at Joey Carberry down in Munster, and then you throw in the injuries. That is now Leinster approaching about as thin as they want to get if they're going to win Heineken Champions Cups again. They had no designated kicker on the pitch for, you know, the final moments. That's kind of, you can see Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster always saying, all right, enough is enough. Yeah. I know Jack McGrath's now gone as well since then, but that is getting to a point where they're saying, we actually need to protect ourselves a bit here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you saw Easton Asiwa into that as well. You know, he was a big loss. And that, you know, going back to even the time they beat Wasps, I've been saying, I don't think they're as good this year as they were last year. I think they've lost that depth, and they're reliant now on Sean O'Brien being able to get through the next kind of 6 or 7 weeks, because really they're that thin at open side, which, when, you know, we've always talked about how strong they are at that position. So they will feel that they've been asset stripped a little bit, and that, you know, that the depth that they built, that they needed when they used 56 or 7 players every season, has been taken away a little bit. But then others will point to the fact that they still book supply every under-20s team coming through, and that the players are there, and, you know, they'll be exposed and they'll get there, but it might take another year. So they're still, like, if everyone's fit, they still have an unbelievable 23.
Yeah.
And I mean, they left Joe Tamani and James Lowe, two well compensated overseas players, off their squad altogether, who were both fit at the weekend. So, yeah, you know, you've got to be clever with your recruitment as well. You know, sign one player they can't use and another who has turned out to be nowhere near as good as the player he was replacing.
Did that Lowe come as a surprise to them, James Lowe, though?
They've never really said, but I think they'd signed Lowe and Fardy presented themselves to him and they thought he was too good to turn down. And they kind of said, we'll deal with the consequences.
Okay.
And it just so happened that Luke McGrath has had a lot of injuries, which has kind of forced him to play but Gibson Park, who is Irish qualified. Like, next season this won't be an issue because Gibson Park will be Irish qualified, so they'll be able to play all three of them. But it's caught them short a bit. You know, they've had to leave Lowe out of the Champions Cup final. That was a three-point game. And, you know, he's worth a lot of points to them. I think they have to get him on the pitch in the semi-final because they just look a little bit toothless without him.
Yeah, they are sweating maybe more so than in recent years on the fitness of a few here now, Liam.
They are, and like I suppose in many ways we've to benchmark the weekend's performances in a number of ways because the derby between Ulster and Leinster makes it a different game than what obviously Munster went through. But when you think of the next stage, the semi-final, so much can get you out of the pool. And that's what was interesting for me watching Ulster against Leinster. We know what Ulster did just to get out of the pool. But in many ways, you almost have to forget an awful lot of that because you're now in Cup Rugby. And that was just what we were coming out in commentary. We were questioning about how Ulster were managing those vital moments as the clock ticked down. You can just see what Ross Byrne did to convert that penalty was extraordinary. At the semi-final stage, if you don't have Robbie Henshaw, for example, that's an enormous blow. That's that player alone. If you don't have Devon Toner, all of a sudden, at that high level of elite sport, those players become crucially important. And I think Leo Cullen would hope that those world-class players, if you want, they're certainly Lions-class players, they're certainly Six Nations-class players, they're of crucial importance when you get to the semi-final and the final stages.
Yeah, Robbie Henshaw in particular, I mean, you think of Bath away, and Cullen made a point of saying we lacked a bit of physicality in midfield, we really missed him. And I think Noel Reid came out of the side after that game for the next time out. And there is just a presence that Henshaw has, which you can see that they really are missing him. A bit of bulk and, you know, this rush defence and physicality is all the more important. He's back in training, he's going to be fit, we think, we know.
Yeah, I think he was up for interview today. I wasn't actually there, but I think the sounds are that he's back in full training and may play this week against Treviso, okay. And if not, next week. And hopefully he overcomes this mysterious dead leg.
It's dragging on a bit now.
It is. And I haven't seen the quotes, but I believe he's provided a bit of clarity on that for tomorrow that will hopefully just make us understand a little bit more because everyone's a bit mystified. I heard even Brian Driscoll saying it was the worst dead leg he's ever heard of, and it sounds like it's quite a rare injury. But I don't have any detail beyond that, unfortunately. But yeah, he is a loss. I mean, everyone would miss a player of that caliber. Like, they lost their line-out caller and, you know, their 6'11" go-to banker. They lost their out half and captain. They lost their defensive leader, Henshaw, who gets them off the line. And O'Loughlin had come in ahead of Reid in that role, but then they lost him during the game as well. Mm. So, you know, they are human. I mean, they only have so many players. And you know, Reid actually did a couple of really good things when he came on. And you know, Mick Kearney's a player who's been part of the Leinster squad for 3 or 4 years and has never really got a go at this level. And he came in, you know, there's players there that will be really proud of how they came in and contributed to a tight win in a cup quarter final. They might not be seen for the rest of the campaign, but they've contributed to this run. But I think to beat Toulouse and negate that attack that Toulouse brought against Racing on Sunday, which was exceptional, Leinster will need all of their defensive leaders, and you know, they'll need their line out of security. They'll need Sexton calling the shots, for all that Byrne did quite well.
And if you look at Rory, if you look at when Ulster were at their best, Stuart McCluskey, I thought, was really, really impressive. When he kind of drifted out of the game a bit, Ulster started to attack kind of right to left, and they started drifting towards the touchline. But when he gave them a pivot of attack, like the try that wasn't the try from Stockdale came directly off, if memory serves, off the top of a line out to McCluskey, who carried brilliantly right across the gain line, huge physicality, a quick recycle, and that gave Stockdale that moment of space out wide to do what he does best. You're missing that with Henshaw. You're missing when everything isn't working out, just a go-to, give it to Henshaw, particularly when the type of defence that Ulster were employing as well, those options to kind of, it was amazing where we were sitting watching. Any time the ball came anywhere near Ringrose, both Ulster centres just sweated on him, Cavan McCluskey, and they threw everything at banking on stopping him.
And sorry, Liam, to interrupt. I think Gordon Darcy was writing about it today. They're trying to force him back inside to get swallowed up. Is that the plan in short?
But I haven't seen such enthusiasm for two opposition centres to actually execute that. The minute the ball was floating in the air towards towards Ringrose, like the two guys abandoned everything else to stop him. Now, when we were in commentary looking at this, we were saying, well, this is, for us sitting up there, this is brilliant to watch, like, because I'd hate to be Gary Ringrose, but what do Leinster now do? So that's what we were discussing. So part of it, maybe Leinster needed to keep that Ulster very aggressive defence a little bit more honest and utilise more kicking, just sub-check them. But also to get maybe Ringrose as a second, or your first centre as another either carrier or another distributor, to put another bit of doubt in the defence. But the minute Ringrose came near the ball, he was absolutely targeted. And it was brilliant to watch. But it's another thing that Leinster have to figure out. If we don't have a real big ball carrier inside Ringrose, what are our now options around that type of offensive defence?
Were you a little bit surprised? And we've touched on this already on the show this week, so I won't go or spend too much time on it. But were you a bit surprised that they hadn't planned for that eventuality, given that really since England and Dublin, we've been almost talking about this problem for Irish teams?
Well, Ulster, and that goes back to my opening smile of the match, is when Henderson laid down the law. And I think somebody ran out over Keane Healy like 2 minutes later. The physicality Ulster brought may have slightly surprised Leinster. Mm. The effectiveness of how they just dominated that whole corridor may have surprised them, maybe. But when you lose, as Rory mentioned, when you lose your general out half, you lose a bulk of corporate knowledge too around how to manage that. I'm not saying Ross Byrne doesn't understand how to manage it, but all these little ingredients that you take out of the pitch can affect the ability to execute those decisions on it. Yeah. But we were surprised that Leinster didn't find a bit of space behind that on-rushing defence to put some question marks in it. They didn't do it. Maybe the messages were coming on, maybe they weren't being executed. But it was a fascinating subplot of the game.
How worried are you about Sean O'Brien at this stage, Liam?
For me, if you'd all the open sides available to Ireland, the best open side in Ireland is still Sean O'Brien, in the sense that he can do it all. He can carry, his breakdown. About 5 years ago, he changed his breakdown routine. Maybe it was a result of being part of the Lions tours and that sort of stuff and learning from that. But he definitely became much more technically proficient around the breakdown. But he was doing all the other stuff as well. So my worry for him would be that how much damage has been done to his hips, his back, all the kind of the muscular skeletal system of him. Will he ever get back to the level that we know, his world-class level? And only time will tell that. But I'd have concerns about, is he able to get back to that level? Mm. Will his body allow him to get back to that level? And that's the big conundrum for him. Mm. When you shift off him then, his absence through injury has given us a sight of Dan Levy, Josh van der Fleer and other options as well, which shows that they're different players to him. But Dan Levy in particular, I don't know their top end speed. I'd say O'Brien looks faster than him, but the work he does around the breakdown is almost Pocock stuff. It's Hooper stuff. It's really, really, really important. It's a totally different style. So the solution for Ireland and Leinster is going to be interesting. But we saw Reece Ruddock playing at 7 for Ireland against South Africa. So the balance then becomes, like Conan showed last Saturday, why I think he's such a brilliant ball carrier. He creates space. If you had him at 8, you could conceivably have a Peter O'Mahony and a CJ Stander in the back row as well. You can dilute that with a variety of, and Geordie Murphy comes into the equation hugely, and Jack O'Donoghue and Tommy O'Donnell. Jack O'Donoghue came on, who started in Thomond Park there a couple of weeks ago. I thought he was brilliant for the opening 40 minutes. So there is strength and depth, but no one quite like Sean O'Brien.
You'd have to be somewhat concerned, I think, Joe. I think, you know, he hasn't played well since he's come back. But again, you've got to put that against the fact that he's played no rugby really since the 2017 Lions tour. Yeah. What he has played is in fits and starts. And you would hope that the terrible injuries that Josh van der Fleer and in particular Dan Levy have suffered, the one bright side of that is that O'Brien will now get the opportunity to play his way into form. And if he's ever going to hit the heights that he used to have, he will have that chance in the next 6 or 7 weeks. He's gone to Dubai for the week, as far as I can tell. And he won't play this week, but that hopefully will freshen him up. But he looks like a player who needs games to get back to the levels that he can get to, because he says he's never been in better shape. You know, players almost always say that. but he hasn't, you know, he's not the dominant physical force that we saw, that we've seen. And to see Henderson run through him in the first couple of minutes, you know, that's a concern from an Irish perspective, particularly because Levy, I think probably if you were picking the hierarchy now, I'd have Levy at number one. And now we, you know, it's hard to know whether Levy will ever be the same player again, given the nature of the injuries. The one thing, the one bright side that I think is Conan's form at this stage is getting to the stage where I think if you're picking an Irish back row, it's Conan plus two. I think he's that good. Wow. And if you think back to the way South Africa beat Wales in the World Cup quarterfinal 4 years ago now, and it was Dwayne Vermeulen with a big play off the base of a scrum that opened up the entire game, I think Conan's a game changer in that way. I think he is a leader. We saw him, he almost dragged Leinster over the line on Saturday. You know, not many other players were making game-changing plays, but he stepped up, and I thought he had a really good Six Nations. I'm not sure about the balance of the standard Omani Conan back row, but he's tried it a couple of times now, and it's obviously in Joe Schmidt's mind. I think it's one of those get the best players on the pitch. I think
Conan's only an eight, is he, or can he play?
He's only an eight. He can play six a little bit, but I think Stander actually seems to be lining out on the open side in that trio, and play there a bit at the weekend because Munster lost O'Donoghue and Botha went into eight. So, you know, particularly against South Africa, who don't really play with a natural open side most of the time, they just pick three big men, and one of whom is a fetcher as such. You know, looking at that quarter final, which I think is framing everything that we talk about this season, that is beginning to look like a real viable prospect. That's what beat Australia in the last test last summer, and you can go back to that. I think Conan's in unbelievable form.
Conan plus two, Liam?
Well, I've always fancied Conan. Like, he's the type of player, statistically, you know, we usually, it's one of the modern parts of professional sport. We say, oh, such and such a player very brilliantly because he made 18 tackles and 22 carries or something. Conan may not be giving you that. I don't know, I haven't looked at his stats, but it may not be giving you. But if you look at the subsequent value his carries create, so he might make far less carries, but he's opening all sorts of opportunity for, we've seen it in for Ireland and for Leinster countless times. Players feed off him. And if you look at the lines, players run when he's in on the ball. They're expecting him. They're expecting a little like Shane Horgan of old to get his hands free to create an opportunity. So there's guys running off him all the time. Mm. That's not the case when you have, say, someone like a CJ Stander, who's a very different style of player, taking one out carry, running into heavy traffic and getting battered, and then surviving or not surviving that battering. Conan isn't that type of player. Mm. So Joe Smith has always erred on the side of that type of secure ball carrying, whereas Conan, I think, has another dimension to it and creates a huge amount of opportunity. I think he's well worth looking at, depending again on all the obvious balances and work rates and all that kind of stuff that will come into.
The quote from Henshaw today, by the way, is he feels optimistic, end quote, that he'll be back playing next week. Our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. I'm not sure we need to dwell overly on Jacob Stockdale's butcher try at this stage. It's been the most overanalyzed butcher try, it feels, in a long time. He'll never do it again, in short, I presume, Rory.
No, you'd imagine so. I mean, he's been told every which way now what he did wrong, and even the ball boy, you know, looked up from his tee and captured it on camera. I don't know if you've seen the footage of it, but it's quite remarkable. You know, it's just why he'll dive next time.
On his technique, though, Tommy Bowe on the left wing with Luke Fitzgerald and Will Slattery made an interesting observation. He said there was no need for him to dive. Like, the ball just slipped. Okay, that's not good, but there was no need for him to dive given where Kearney was and where he was in relation to the try line.
Well, Tommy knows a lot more about scoring tries than I do.
But it was the first person who said, well, hang on, he doesn't necessarily need to dive.
Well, two hands is more secure than one hand, so maybe he needs to touch down with just get it down. Like, it's not... Like,
yeah, we can overanalyze this.
I think Dave Kearney probably is the forgotten man a little bit. I think the pressure that he maintained and the never-give-up attitude, a bit like Maidard and the Freddie Burns incident, which wasn't the same because Burns had celebrated about 2 minutes before, you know, sauntering in. I think it's a very different incident. But I think that is Kearney did really, really well there, and probably, you know, a bit of a match-winning moment for a player. Again, another guy who's been through the mill and come out the other side and is probably one of the less heralded players in that Leinster squad.
Yeah.
Just get it down. Yeah. You've got to get down, and he'll know that, and, you know, he doesn't need me telling him.
Yeah. Liam, you don't have any botched swan dive in your locker back in the day, do you?
Not so much, no. But I think is more interesting is the fact that Ulster, after everything, got to the 71st minute, 18-all. And that's where the difference began to. So events, dear boy, events. Events will always happen. Mm. You know, there are always going to be mistakes, and some will give away, and some will, like the missed conversion from almost in front of the posts would have made a huge difference. So Ulster put themselves in a position with 8.5 minutes to go to win the game. And I think that's the lesson learned. That's more important. How can they, what lessons culturally can they gain from that? What can they need to do to ensure that they can control the ball? And I felt that at that point, Billy Burns at out half ended up playing the game in the wrong part of the pitch.
Okay.
So you saw they tried to score. And in many cases, they tried and score a try. And all the while, the Leinster defence started pushing Ulster backwards. They started an attack in around the Leinster 10-metre line or even further, closer to the try line. And over time, over phases, they just kept inching their way backwards till eventually they turned over the ball. When I don't think they needed to play rugby there, they could have said, listen, we have 8 minutes left. We need to make it Leinster's problem. It's 18-all. We just need to stay in the Leinster 22, put the pressure on them. Don't let them out. Keep the pressure there. And that's cup rugby stuff. That's stuff you see.
Could I interrupt on that point? Because it was a feature in the Edinburgh game as well. It doesn't strike me that cup rugby is that complicated. You know what I mean? Like, the things you're saying just make perfect sense. It's a bit more conservative. Clearly, there's no bonus point at stake. It's a pressure game. I almost feel that should be a 5-minute conversation with the team. I don't understand some fairly curious decision making. And I don't accept either, well, in the heat of the moment, pressure, blah, blah, blah. I think if you go in with the mindset that this is cup rugby and let's be conservative and let's put pressure and force mistakes, I think some of the decision making, you could argue, is actually quite poor.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's what we were saying in commentary. Like, if you drop Ronan Agar in with 8 minutes to go and say you're playing for Ulster, the score is 18-all, here's what your assets are, what you want them to do. There's no doubt in my mind he'd be saying, I want to take a knife out and cut Leinster's throat. And the way to do that is to put the ball into the corner and not let them out. And as soon as they get out, we put them back in again. All we want is one score to win this game.
Yeah.
We don't need a try.
Yeah.
But I don't know that we're Ulster, like if you take Munster rugby coming up through the Munster Senior Cup, the famous old Munster Senior Cup, where certain teams continuously won that and other teams who could play better rugby never won it. And the difference is one knew how to win a cup match and others didn't. So that is the difference. So what gets you out of the pool doesn't necessarily get you into the semi-final.
Yeah.
So you have to adjust to that. And for me, that's the bigger talk. That's the bigger lesson learned. Everyone will focus on Stockdale. But Ulster, now I know they had emptied the bin. They deserve enormous credit. But with 8 minutes to go, they could have won that game. And I just felt that they didn't ask the right questions of Leinster to kind of make it their game, if you like.
That said, I hope Toulouse never start playing cup rugby.
No, I was just about to talk about taking your points. And then, you brought up Toulouse. I think there is something to what you're saying there, though. Like, the take your points. You know, that old maxim of, you know, those Munster marches to the 06 and 08 and... it's this lost art that teams seem to have forgotten because they play in bonus point tournaments week to week. That, you know, Connacht didn't do it on Friday. Connacht could have got themselves back within striking distance, but they kept going to the corner to try and go for the knockout blow. And really, all they needed, and they were missing, Jack Hardy had gone off and they're down no tens, but their leader did kick a pretty good conversion. Then Edinburgh seemed to just determine to batter Munster into submission when if they just kept on 3-6-9, they make Munster play.
Like, did none of these players happen to catch the Wales game against Ireland? Like, and just the just how diff suddenly you find yourself, Ireland, we're 12 points down, we're out of this game.
And Ireland at nil just didn't try and kick their way back into the game as well. They turned down points as well. And I think teams need to kind of almost remind themselves of the simplicity of it.
I just presume they're working off some stats that we don't have, but then like Matt Williams in the Times during the Six Nations had something like off 50 lineouts which were from penalty, you know, kickable positions.
Yeah.
There were and 50 times when they went to the corner, I think there were 3 maul tries. The stats were really low anyway.
Yeah, which I think it had dipped in this tournament, but I think you need to be scoring off 1 in 3 lineouts
to justify it.
And I don't think that's, certainly Edinburgh didn't hit that strike rate, Connacht didn't hit that strike rate. So, you know, those decisions failed. Now, you may feel like you're making the other team tackle, you're tiring them out, that in the end game it will come back, you know, it will come to your benefit. There's probably all sorts of other stuff gone into it as well. They're not making this decision willy-nilly. They're not, you know, these are not stupid
people running these teams. Clearly, yeah, there's a logic, yeah.
But there's sometimes you just got to get ahead on the scoreboard and make the amount of play that you're, the amount of domination that you have count. And like Edinburgh in particular didn't do that on Saturday, and they paid the price because they gave a sucker an even break. And if you keep Munster in the game,
if that sucker's Munster,
that's 2 quarterfinals in a row that they've rescued with an unbelievable piece of play. You know, last year with Andrew Conway, and this year a lovely try for Keith Earls. You know, they stay in the game, and if you leave them in the game, they'll invariably come back and haunt you.
Yeah, remarkable. On Racing Toulouse then, Liam, were you kind of looking at this and think this is absolutely beautiful and gorgeous and everything I love in rugby, or were you almost saying this isn't going to cut it when things get down to crunch time later on in the tournament?
I think it's amazing, isn't it? Isn't great to have them back and some of the audacious offloads and athleticism in it. Again, I think they have to completely reboot what they're going to do at the semi-final stage, because what gets you out of the quarterfinal may not get you into the final, if that makes any sense. I think it's brilliant. It's great. Like what a weekend of sport. It was just off the charts. It was absolutely off the charts for all the different reasons, the different decisions, the red card, the game, the derby in Dublin, the Edinburgh, I suppose, malfunction. It was just an unbelievable weekend of rugby. And it was fantastic to watch. I felt sore, though, for Racing because of the Irish connection there. It would have been lovely to see them. We did the final last year, wasn't it, when Dunica Ryan he banjacked his shoulder, could barely play and played on and stuff. So from an Irish point of view, I'd love to have seen Racing continue on. And if it wasn't an Irish team to win it, I'd love to see Racing win it out for the Irish connection. So that from that sense, it was a pity. But some of the athleticism and offloading from Toulouse was just sensational.
And will that translate to the semi-final? Because they obviously came to Dublin back in January and were much heralded for obvious reasons, and they'd beaten Leinster over in France. But then just were never really in that game. It was like 29-13. Maybe the conditions didn't suit them. They are, of 21 matches, that is still their only defeat in 21 matches. So, you know, they're putting together a serious run. Are they going to be a massively different proposition at the EVV Stadium to what people might have seen at the RDS?
Well, the short answer is if Leinster start with the team they started last weekend, they're vulnerable.
That was pretty similar team to the RDS team, mind.
Yeah, but if they start at the semi-final with that team, they're vulnerable, because Ulster showed how to make them vulnerable. That doesn't mean it can be repeated. Mm. That's why it's so important for, as we've just discussed, Henshaw, Toner, James Lowe, these guys to be back and available and fit. And if they are, that puts certainly the balance in Leinster's favour. So, and the home and the not being at home but playing in Dublin is a pretty cool outcome for Leinster as well. Yeah. So I think the team that started there is potentially vulnerable, but add in the other players and all of a sudden that swings it Leinster's way.
Okay.
I think the first 40 in that game in the RDS was really compelling, really even. Mm. You know, both sides going at it, long phases of play, and Toulouse only had 40 minutes in them, and Leinster came out second half having worn them down and did it. And you would be concerned that, given the amount of rugby the Toulouse players play over the course of a season, that's not going to have improved. Although they seem to have found a couple of players, the right winger, his name escapes me now, with that offload.
Yeah.
You know, he was exceptional. And, you know, Kaino really looks like he's grown into the leader in that team. And, I mean, you've got two World Cup winners in their starting lineup, and that can't be forgotten when it comes to Cup Rugby. I mean, himself and Fáil Mhuine are world-class players. So I think Leinster, with everyone there, will back their physicality and back their ability to kind of make the younger players in the Toulouse team make mistakes the way they did in the RDS. But Toulouse will have learned from that experience. It's, you know, it's not ideal. I don't think playing a team you've already beaten quite well. I think you'd rather play someone new, because that, you know, you'll have worked each other out over the course of the season. And I think Toulouse seem to be doing a lot more analysis than say some French teams, who take a little bit more relaxed approach to it. But I had Racing for the tournament. I thought Racing would get out of that game and go and beat Leinster in the semi and beat.
They should have, really.
They're the stronger panel, and they had all. I think losing Tomah was huge, but there was something weird about Racing also. Even the time they went to Ravenhill and they just weren't really at it. You know, you can't turn it on and turn it off, I don't think. And they're not the sum of their parts. You know, like, they were so good in the final last year, and they've strengthened. I know they lost their back row and captain, who gone upstairs, but they've recruited so well. They've got such an unbelievable squad. They've got such an advantage playing in an indoor stadium. I mean, that should have suited them rather than Toulouse, but Toulouse thrived. And I think the conditions as well. I mean, that RDS day was a very, very difficult day.
It was awful. I mean, it was incredibly windy as well. People may not realise, so it kind of ruined the game in some respects. It was one of the reasons Leinster just kept the ball in the first half. They were into the wind.
Yeah.
So Munster's reward, Liam, is Saracens away.
What a beautiful, beautiful reward. You've seen that tongue-in-cheek, Joe, a little bit, I think, are you?
I think, it's just so difficult. The prospect of Saracens away, that must be about the worst semi-final you could get. I mean, Leinster away as well is no fun either, but Sarri's away is...
Well, away is a figurative term, because there'll be more Munster fans than Saracens fans in the Ricoh Arena. I mean, it's Coventry's about a good hour and a half up the road, 2 hours up the road from where they play in Barnet, I think it is. And I think,
what does the Allianz Park hold attendance-wise? I know they ripped down the stands during the summer.
Tennis?
Is it only tennis?
Okay. Well, yeah, I haven't been there for a couple of years.
You have to have over 25 to get the semi-final in whatever ground you want.
Well, they've just done a link-in with Spurs, so they're going to be playing one league game at the new White Hart Lane or whatever, Tottenham Hotspur Arena or whatever they're calling
it. It'll be a fairly empty arena.
Well, they're good at getting one game. They've done it in Wembley and pushing that game, but the problem with the semi-final is even 3 weeks to sell it. So it won't be, it'll be a Premiership game, but I think their long-term plan is that they build themselves into that, but they're a long way from there.
So Munster will outnumber Saracens fans?
Yeah, well, looking at the way the flights have already started selling out.
Right.
There's 15,000 in Edinburgh last weekend. They travelled in unbelievable numbers. Their backing was huge.
Yeah.
So that won't be an issue, but then Saracens are the kind of team that won't really bother them either. But I think the home advantage thing won't really count.
That's a fair point, yeah, okay. And what you were at the state, you were at Murrayfield.
Mm.
Thoughts?
Yeah. Pascal Gauzère is a very interesting referee. He let everything go. I mean, the breakdown was absolute carnage. There was no flow to the game because of the turnovers, and Edinburgh got the better of that. And Edinburgh did everything they could to win the game and just couldn't knock Munster over.
Yeah.
Munster impressively hung in. Their defence was excellent. I think JP Ferreira is a guy that I haven't spoken to, and Van Graan fronts up a lot of their press. I'd like to have a chat with him because I think it seems that he's done an unbelievable job with that defence. They've been to last that long without the ball, the fitness was really good, and you could see Edinburgh start to flag. And it all came down to that moment where Pierre Schumann steps out, bumps into Tyburn makes a bit of a meal of it, and the game changes. A 6-point game becomes a 4-point game in Munster favour. Unbelievable try. They've talked all since last season about the catch pass, now they want to improve it, and they don't get the show very often in these big stages, but they just showed in that one move that it paid off. Earls took it brilliantly. Blindell nails an unbelievable conversion. And then even then, they had to do a bit of defending and with Darcy Graham and these dangerous players, but they looked pretty comfortable in their defence. They'll be tested more by Saracens, undoubtedly, who will have Farrell back, maybe Mako Vinopola. But I think this is Munster's chance. I think this Munster team will never get a better chance to win the European Cup. This group of players who succeeded the O'Gara O'Connell generation, and they have failed to do themselves justice in the semi-final stage the last two seasons, and they'll openly admit that they've got to be putting everything into this. And Ulster showed that if you can harness everything you have into one performance, you can rattle anyone. And Saracens are human. They've beaten the Saracens in the pool stages in the last couple of years. So they have a chance, and I think they certainly won't fear going over there. And even the fact that they've got three lines in their squad who know those players and know the humanity of those players will stand to them. So I wouldn't write them off in any means.
Okay, fair enough. Liam, you're not writing them off?
Certainly not. I think with Klein in the second row, along with Tyke Byrne, it changes as a game changer for me. Joey Carberry hopefully will have a run of games, and I'm not so sure exactly where his injury is at the moment. And they've got a back three that can certainly target it. Again, if you look at man for man and unit for unit, there's definitely parity within the side.
Okay.
For me, it comes down to the style Munster play. Do they want to get involved in the trenches, or do they want to vary their game a bit? And I think varying their game a little bit might give them a bit more positive outcome, because obviously we know the power of those English players.
Sorry to interrupt. Have we not been saying this about Munster at this stage of this competition for a long time now?
I think, but the difference is they now have the players to certainly broaden their game. And Blindell at 10 or Carberry at 10 makes a big difference. But I think at the core, the two second rows, Tyke Byrne and Klein, are hugely important. That Dave Kilcoyne is having a really brilliant mid-season as well. And there's an awful lot of strengths in what they are. I think they're a much better side than when they played in Dublin and were beaten, humiliated in many, many ways. I think they're a far more improved squad. So to me, it's a subtlety around how they shift the point of contact, I think, is what you want. And you want to get opportunities for someone like Keith Earls, who clearly hunts for most of them. But when you give them opportunities, he's as good as any in the world. And like with Chris Farrell, if he gets a number of games in midfield as well, I think they certainly have. If they can put their strongest team out, Scornis 23, they have a very, very good chance.
Okay. I know you have to run there. One tiny quick question, answer as short as you like. I saw a few people wondering, well, Jack McGrath's move is confirmed. Is it a case of the king's dead, long live the king, and you instantly start promoting others behind him, or do you get everything you can out of Jack McGrath between now and the end of the season?
Well, I think the first thing is, in terms of him going to Ulster, it's his decision if he goes to Ulster. So ultimately, it's his decision. So there must be reason for why he's going there. He obviously, there might be some injury profile around it, like how fit is his body overall, that'll allow him and Leo Cullen to have confidence. Like, this guy's a quality player.
Yeah.
So then it must be down to a communication between himself and Leo Cullen. Like, Cian Healy has been his biggest threat. He has just found form, and he's just absolutely fantastic. Even during the Six Nations, when most of the Irish players were struggling for form, he was still providing. I've had the pleasure of seeing the other loose heads playing this season, Peter Dooley, but Ed Byrne, for example. They're both relatively young guys. Ed Byrne is a super player. So there is Cian Healy ahead of him, no argument there. And then there's a lot of young guys coming through. So it's really down to what Leo Cullen is saying to Jack McGrath. And it's really down to what Jack McGrath's body is doing for the rest of the season. But it would be silly not to employ Jack McGrath. Like, Leinster have the benefit, they're qualified for a home semi-final now in the Guinness. So then it becomes, do they have him for Europe? It would be silly not to utilise a quality player of his ability just because he's moving on. I think that would be daft, and I can't imagine Leo Cullen would do that.
No, I wouldn't think so. That'd be cutting off the nose. We'll let you go. Thanks a million.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Liam Toland there. A quick Heineken Star comment or two, then Neil on YouTube. Both Ulster and Leinster in effect won on Saturday. Ulster know now they can sit at the top table, and Leinster know that with an injury crisis they can navigate through it. Stephen, interesting to hear you guys laud Conan's ability to bring other players into the game. However, Schmidt seems to prefer prescriptive safe plays, and the ability to offload comes a long way down his list of priorities. Kieran Fortune, is another worry James Lowe hasn't played in a while too? And Susan, the Saracens game shapes up to be a classic opportunity for Munster to do what they do, find a way to win. They haven't in the semi-final of late, the only thing.
Yeah,
Keith Earls did an interview and he said he reckons he's lost about 16 knockout games. There's both brilliant, wonderful heritage and DNA. There's also scar tissue building up. And as you said, this is their chance, maybe, age profile of the team. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, a lot of them are 29, 30, 31. You know, next year's a World Cup year. That's last time all four provinces went out in the pool stage. Oh, sorry, Connacht didn't. They got to the quarterfinal of the Challenge Cup, but the three Champions Cup provinces went out. It was a disaster. That can be a bit of a write-off. And they're getting more players into the Ireland squad than they ever have before under Joe Schmidt. So that's going to have an impact as well. I think the World Cup starts. The World Cup finishes and the Champions Cup starts 2 weeks later. So, that's going to be really, really tough. So this is a massive opportunity. And the fact that they've been there, and I think they have achieved probably what is written down in Van Graan's goals for the season. I would imagine they've achieved that. Probably he'd like to get a home, I don't know what his KPIs are or whatever, but I'd say a home semi-final in the Pro 14 would be one of them. So he's a bit of work to do there, but I think semi-final is a really good result, and it's probably the baseline of what they wanted to achieve. But it's so hard to get there, 3 years in a row and not really do yourself justice. You know, I think they've got all the experiences. Peter Manny said in Bordeaux after the last game that he was sick of learning lessons. And I think I keep going back to that quote, but you got to put that into practice someday. And they just didn't fire a shot against Racing last year. You would hope that they would at least give a really good account of themselves and ask Saracens really hard questions. Murray didn't play 2 years ago. He reminded me of that today. He was doing a couple of interviews in Dublin, and you guys spoke to him as well. You know, Duncan Williams started that game. They didn't have Chris Farrell. They didn't have Ty Byrne. Blindell wasn't playing didn't play particularly well that day. If he is in instead of Carberry, because, you know, Carberry's about 50-50 at the moment, it seems like, he will want to give a better account of themselves. They are stronger than they were then. They have that experience. And this team, I think, will never get a better shot.
It'd be remiss of us not to just touch on Darren Cave. He's announced he's going to retire at the end of the season. 225 appearances for Ulster, 11 appearances for Ireland. He's been playing for over a decade now. He's still only 31. You half wonder, I'm sure he's been thinking about it for a while, if his performance at the Aviva made him stop and think he's got another few years in the tank.
Yeah, it's quite a... I know he's not gone yet, because he'll probably play a bit of a role in the next couple of weeks, but as a parting shot, it was a pretty good one. You know, it was a really, really impressive performance. He went to the last World Cup. People probably forget that. You know, he was probably around the fringes of the Ireland squad for an awful long time, and maybe, you know, he happened to come through at a time when O'Driscoll and Darcy were at their peak, and a couple of good centres have come across since. So he's, he probably had opportunities maybe to go abroad and do something, you know, and he'll finish a one-club man. And his contribution to Ulster is pretty remarkable. And he'll hope that maybe they can get themselves into the frame for a Pro 14 to sign off with, because they can't get a home quarter-final or a home semi-final in that tournament, but they're second at the moment. So they can get a home quarter-final and give themselves a shot at getting all the way. So be a nice way for him to finish if he does.
Yeah, sure would. Rory O'Connor, Irish Independent. Thanks, Emil.
Cheers.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.